Sandy, Tony called. What's up with the dog? Dog's fine. Now, what's up with the car? The car also appears to be fine. Nothing's burning and there's no sign anything exploded. The thermometer says 54 degrees. It's cold in there, if anything. Well, if a car's fine, why is he taking pictures of it? Buck asked. Why's a crooked letter that can't be made straight? Sergeant Shane Dinks replied, as if this explained everything. He kept his eye on Curtis, who went on circling the car like a fashion photographer circling a model, snapping photos, tucking each Polaroid as it came out of the slot into the waistband of the old khaki shorts he was wearing. While this was going on, Tony allowed the rest of those present to approach by fours and take a look. When Sandy's turn came, he was struck by how Curtis's ankles lit up green each time the Buick flashed out.
Radiation, he thought. Jesus Christ, he's got radiation burns.
Then he remembered what Kurt had been doing earlier and had to laugh. Michelle hadn't wanted to call him into the phone because he was mowing the grass, and that was what was on his ankles. Grass stains.
Come out of there,
Phil muttered from Sandy's left. He still had the dog by the collar, although now Mr. D seemed quite docile.
Come out of there, don't be pressing your luck.
Kurt started backing toward the door as if he'd heard Phil, or all of them, thinking that same thing. More likely, he was just out of film. As soon as he came through the door, Tony put an arm around his shoulders and pulled him aside. As they stood there talking, a final weak pulse of purple light came. It was really no more than a twitch. Sandy looked at his watch. It was 9:10. The entire event had lasted not quite an hour. Tony and Kurt were looking at the Polaroids with an intensity Sandy couldn't understand. If, that was, Tony had been telling the truth when he said the Buick and the other stuff in the shed were unchanged. And to Sandy, all of it did look unchanged. At last, Tony nodded as if something was settled and walked back to the rest of the troopers. Kurt, meanwhile, went to the roll-up door for a final peek. The welder's goggles were pushed up on his forehead by then. Tony ordered everyone back into the barracks except for George Stankowski and Herb Avery. Herb had come in from patrol while the light show was still going on, probably to take a dump. Herb would drive 5 miles out of his way to take a dump at the barracks he was famous for it and took all ribbing stoically. He said you could get diseases from strange toilet seats, and anyone who didn't believe that deserved what he got. Sandy thought Herb was simply partial to the magazines and the upstairs crapper. Trooper Avery, who would be killed in a rollover car crash 10 years later, was an American Heritage man. You two have got the first watch, Tony said. Sing out if you see anything peculiar, even if you only think it's peculiar. Herb groaned at getting sentry duty and started to protest. Put a sock in it, Tony said, pointing at him. Not one more word. Herb noted the red spots on the SC's cheeks and closed his mouth at once. Sandy thought that showed excellent sense. Matt Babicki was talking on the radio as the rest of them crossed the ready room behind Sergeant Shane Dinks. When Matt told Unit 6 to state his 20, Andy Gallucci's response was strong and perfectly clear. The static had cleared out again. They filled the seats in the little living room upstairs, those last in line having to content themselves with grabbing patches of rug. The ready room downstairs was bigger and had more chairs, but Sandy thought Tony's decision to bring the crew up here was a good one. This was family business, not police business. Not strictly police business, at least. Curtis Wilcox came last, holding his Polaroids in one hand, goggles still pushed up on his forehead, rubber flip-flops on his green feet. His T-shirt read, Horlicks University Athletic Department. He went to the sergeant, and the two of them conferred in murmurs while the rest waited. Then Tony turned back to the others.